The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Hello, and thanks very much for joining me for this episode of Climate Matters. Today we're going to dip right back into the archives and pick up an episode that we recorded and played for you previously. I do hope that you enjoy it. Hello, and thanks very much for joining me for another episode of Climate Matters. I'm Lindsay Wood, Director of Climate Strategy Company Resilience Limited, and Climate Matters is brought to you by Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. Well, today we're going to go into hot off the press Climate Matters number 118, and that one is dealing with financial aspects in different ways. For example, electric vehicles, consumer, that's the Consumer Magazine, and who's happy with their vehicles, and a financial take on that. A big bill coming due, referencing an insightful article that's been written by a colleague in Marlborough. Slow fashion equals great sense, to do with upcycling old clothes, and investment in climate responses makes great sense. Well, we know that, don't we? But it needs to be repeated so often. We also have a quiz for you this time. And so we'll start with the quiz question. What is tornadogenesis? What is tornadogenesis? You probably don't need a clue. It's very much like it sounds like. So I'll leave that with you, and we'll come back to the answer towards the end. So anyway, let's get into it. I guess the first thing is to say that the last Climate Matters was the Fast Track special, the Fast Track Bill special, that is, and it drew quite a lot of reader feedback. Mostly was very positive. There were a small number of negative ones, but to the credit of the people opposing it, they were actually very constructive in the way that they emailed me. And I thought that was a good sign that we were having a constructive exchange. Since that Climate Matters came out, ex-Secretary of Justice Colin Keating has got quite a big article in Newsroom. We'll give you a link to that on the Fresh FM Climate Matters webpage. But the point there is that even though Keating was hugely knowledgeable in legal matters, he was an advisor to the government for years, he is not even being allowed to or accepted to speak to the select committee. That is how much of a gatekeeper they are being of who can talk to them. He also, this is very interesting, he's used his legal skills to come up with an alternative to the Fast Track Approvals Bill that really achieves the same outcomes that the bill says it's trying to achieve, that is, overcoming some of the very slow approval processes and the big costs associated with those. It's still addressing that, but it doesn't come with the huge draconian downsides that the proposed Fast Track Bill comes with. So well done, Colin Keating. Very bad news that the Select Committee hearing the Fast Track Approvals Bill submissions won't even put him on the list. That is a shocker. Okay, as I mentioned, this Climate Matters has a focus on economics, but there is an angle of the Fast Track bills that I'll just touch on, and that is the Fast Track Approvals Bill frequently refers to concepts like cost effectiveness or must be economical, but it almost never talks about the timescale over which that cost effectiveness is being measured. We have talked about this on Climate Matters many times. That is a chronic omission from discussions on cost effectiveness, and it is also a discussion that's almost never had in terms of, well, what happens if we don't do anything? What is the cost of inaction on climate? And we have a bit to say about that in the coming Climate Matters. Okay, listen up, EVs, consumer, and who's happy with their cars? The Consumer Institute surveyed 8,000 drivers and 72 models of car. And here's a quote from them. Now, this is an interesting quote. There's a follow-up, so don't take this first bit at face value. Quotes, Among those who currently drive a petrol or diesel car, only 13% say they'd be likely to buy an EV. That's a very dismal number. But when non-EV owners actually do change to an EV, here's what they say, quotes, "It's hard to go back." In other words, they really like the change. And in the survey the consumer did, electric vehicle owners were, and I'm quoting, were the most satisfied of all. Again, we'll give you a link to that. But there's also a graph in this item, and I'll explain it briefly. It's showing, and it's to do with the sales of electric vehicles, and it's showing the sales climbing steeply month or steadily month on month up until the end of 2023, up to where they represented around about 30% of all purchases, and they were running at over 3,000 vehicles per month. And that was when the new government policies kicked in about A, removing subsidies for vehicle purchases, for electric vehicle purchases, you know, the clean car subsidies, and B, applying road user charges. Well, they didn't apply them then. They applied them in April, but they announced them then. And the effect of that was dramatic. In 1 month, the sales of electric vehicles fell from 30% down to about 3% of the total sales, dropped to about a tenth of what they were. That is a stark evidence of the effect of that those changes in policy, and also, I think, stark evidence of the effectiveness of the previous policies. So the two are opposite sides of the same coin, aren't they? However, I crunched some numbers, and this is something alarming that I came out with. If we look at the effect of that government policy and the dropping in these, I did the numbers of how many cars would then be in fossil fuel energy systems rather than electric. And the effect of that over the lifetime of the cars is about 4.5 million tons of carbon dioxide. Now, when you think that New Zealand's annual emissions, net emissions after we've allowed for forestry and so on, around a bit over 50 million tons, that means that we're adding a tenth of a whole year's emissions just by that one policy change, just in the 3 years that this government is going to be in office. And the cost of that, because we have this policy, and this policy is Labour's fault, not National's, a policy of saying, well, if we don't make it with our attempt to decarbonize, then we'll have to buy overseas offsets. Buying offsets for 4.5 million tons of carbon dioxide, even at New Zealand's current low carbon prices, comes in at approaching $250 million. So that's the sort of money we're talking about, and that segues into the next item. So just to recap on that before we leave it, the effect of the change in policy has been a dramatic drop in EV sales, and that comes with almost $250 million price tag for the impact of the emissions from the replacement fossil fuel cars that people will buy instead. $250 million that we will have to pay offshore to compensate for the fact that we're falling short on our national commitment to decarbonize our economy. Okay, I'll give you a quick quote before we move on to the next item. And the quick quote is from Forbes Media. That used to be Forbes Magazine. It's the US business one, a very staunch business magazine. They've had some pretty insightful things to say about climate and so on. And essentially, they see climate action as a major business opportunity, and they see real risk going with a failure to act. And we'll give a link to this as well. Here's a quote from them talking about the cost of climate inaction. Quotes, "It's time to take the industrial lobbying and politics out of action on emissions." That bears repeating. From Forbes Media, "It's time to take the industrial lobbying and politics out of action on emissions. I don't think that needs much more explanation, does it? Although I could go into some examples very recently of lobbying going exactly on that opposite direction. Okay, here's the next one. And if we think that that bill for the emissions from the fossil fuel cars that I was just talking about is a big bill, get a load of this in an article headed up, "A Big Bill Coming Due." Take a few minutes to read it. We've got a link for that in the on the Climate Matters webpage of the Fresh FM website as well, where climate campaigner Tom Powell from Marlborough has crunched the numbers and reveals a cumulative multi-billion dollar shortfall on climate commitments, plus government silence on budgeting for it. So to unpick that a little bit, New Zealand has what's known as a nationally determined contribution under the Paris Agreement. In fact, all the signatories have. And that means that each country puts up its own proposal to get to the to get at least to decarbonize, to keep temperature below 2 degrees, but ideally to keep it below 1.5 degrees global warming. Those are known as nationally determined contributions, or NDCs, and each country says, this is what we'll do. We're going to take this much off transport. We're going to reduce, in our case, our agricultural emissions, et cetera, et cetera. And anything that's left that hasn't been reduced, if we fall short on our commitments, we pay for that in terms of offsets. And that is generally by buying carbon in forests overseas. It's a very dubious process, but that's nonetheless how it's spelled out as working. So in this context, Tom Powell has calculated that our shortfall in our climate commitments is so great that we're accumulating billions of dollars worth of debt as a future liability against our inability to decarbonize enough. As if that's not bad enough on its own, Tom also goes on to say the EU is, and I'm quoting, implementing a carbon border adjustment mechanism. And if that sounds like a bit of a mouthful, what it is, it's like a carbon tax or a carbon duty that recognizes the level of climate effectiveness or climate responsibility of the source countries, and that is likely to penalize New Zealand for weak climate performance. So on top of the multi-billion dollar bill, just because of our nationally determined contributions, we've also got potentially a big bill to the EU because of this border tariff. And get this, other sectors are following suit and looking closely at the same sort of mechanisms. So we will be seen as a bit of a pariah if we're not careful. So if you think about the combined reason we're in this predicament, it's really a mix of Labour and National. Labour set the groundbreaking Zero Carbon Act. That was a great piece of legislation. National bought into it, but now they're talking about reneging on that. But then Labour in turn actually reneged on their own processes. They failed to heed the Climate Commission's advice. They even failed to heed it without the reporting or justification that their own bill said they should do. And then they fell badly short on implementing it. But in the end, as I've just talked about, they did promote really good electric vehicle uptake. Okay, we better keep going. Oh, to finish on that, though, the national side of it is that they have actually unpicked a lot of the promising climate strategies that Labour put in, such as the EV policies we've just talked about. Okay, here's another thing you can look on as a financial one if you like. Slow fashion, great dollars and cents as well as climate sense. And I'm referring mainly here to the Nelson Tasman Climate Forum's Repair with Flair fashion show that they ran in their recent and hugely successful climate festival. Fabrics cause up to about 8% of global emissions, as well as a huge amount of waste. And quoting here from an organization called Genico, globally, the fashion industry is the second most polluting industry after the oil and gas sector. That's not a reputation anyone should be proud of, is it? And in fact, one of the big causes of that problem is fast fashion, where people just get clothes for a short time and then dump them or pass them on to an op shop or whatever. But here's the thing, that the Repair with Flair fashion show featured students. I think they were mostly intermediate school students. They were challenged to take garments that needed repairing, but the Repair with Flair was that they were converted into other garments of a different style in the process. That was a wonderful initiative. It was a great show and some inspiring work by the students from all around the Nelson Tasman area. Really good stuff. And they also showed a video clip in the fashion show from a Whangarei organization called Intercept. And what they do, and I think this is an inspirational initiative, is that they take clothes from the Salvation Army shop that have been donated to the shop but are too rough to sell. So these are ones that aren't even good enough for the op shop to sell. And Intercept then works with school children around the Whangarei area, and they convert them to cool garments that then go back to the op shop to be sold. What a great circle that is. I think that's wonderful. So there's a link to the Intercept website there as well. Okay, investment in climate response pays handsomely. Should be a policy mantra. Investment in climate response pays handsomely. Should be a policy mantra. And to be honest, I feel a bit like a crack record in climate matters. Is disasters associated with global warming seem good for GDP? GDP is a nonsense measure, really. It measures action, not motion. So anything that involves transactions of money is good for GDP. An earthquake is good for GDP because people have to spend to fix it up. It's not good from very much else. And climate disasters are the same. So disasters associated with global warming seem good for GDP, but do not stimulate growth. I'm quoting here. Do not stimulate growth. Instead, national income declines, productive capital dwindles, and investment falls. That's a paper that was published in the U.S. National Bureau of Economic Research. So they're no sort of extreme green tree huggers at all. And going on and quoting from them, the macroeconomic damages from climate change are 6 times larger than previously thought. And our results imply a social cost of carbon of over $1,000 per ton of carbon dioxide. That's over 20 times the current price in New Zealand. That's huge. And quoting, both are multiple orders of magnitude, both being economic downside of the disaster and the social costs. Both are orders of magnitude above previous estimates. Time and again, we get this advice that the cost of inaction or inadequate action, the cost of it far outstrips the cost of actually doing the action. And yet we still have governments that run away from even the weakest of investments in climate strategies. Now, here's a quote, and it's from the organization Carbon Brief. I think it's a UK organization. We've quoted from them before. This is to do with climate tipping points, not directly economic, but it has huge implications. Here's the quote. Our best models likely underestimate tipping point risks. The world is largely flying blind into this vast threat. Tipping points, remember, are items that when you get to a certain point, suddenly they start to run out of control. There is a very good and very short video clip attached to that article. And it's only 1:29. So I will give a link to the Carbon Brief article. Our best models likely underestimate tipping point risks. The world is largely flying blind into this vast threat. That's no good, is it? Right, we're at the end here now. We've got time for a hotter tip for a cooler planet. No surprises here. Feel cool, look cool, help a charity, help the planet. Check the availability of upcycled clothing near you. And if there is none, encourage it. And we'll give an answer to the quiz. Tornado genesis describes the process that forms tornadoes. And there's some pretty interesting terminology comes through there, such as the merging of high-end tornadic supercells. Okay, we're at the end. Thank you so much for your company. Climate Matters is brought to you by Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station, and Fresh FM broadcasts in Blenheim on 88.9, to Eastern Golden Bay on 95.0, to the Nelson CBD on 107.2, and across the Nelson Tasman region on 104.8. It's also streamed to the planet on freshfm.net, and podcasts of Climate Matters and of other locally produced shows are available through freshfm.net and through the accessmedia.nz app. Right, and that really is the end of our show today. Thank you so much for your company. I do hope I enjoy it again next week. And of course, as always, kia kaha for the climate.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM, with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.